Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my guns,
and I don't mean no money like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun.
Recorded 27th July, 2012. Hello all and welcome back to another episode of Rangers A to Z with your host, Iron Angel. It's been a little while since I've done a couple of new shows, and I'll go back into why all that happened here in a little bit. Ah, screw it, I'll do it now. First thing I want to do is start off with saying this is a free podcast. This is free to distribute, share, make fun of, do whatever you want with it. Give it a chance, give it the finger, give it to your dog, I don't care. Hopefully you enjoy it, hopefully you learn something. You can find us on Facebook at Rangers A to Z. All right, just search for that. You'll find it. It's Facebook Rangers. It might be dot A to Z. It might just be Rangers space A to Z underscore A to Z. I can't remember exactly. You can check out the main Rangers site at r4nger5.com. That same spelling applies to the standard, on Facebook, everything else. Pretty much all Rangers stuff. If you go on YouTube, you can go to the Rangers Tube there. That's r4nger5. Pretty much anywhere you look for us. There's been a few other things I've shown up with that particular spelling in the past few years, but for the most part, it's mostly us. A lot of why I've been off is for weird reasons. One, it's been really hot this summer where I live, and as you can probably hear the scream in the background right now from the fan. When I had the fan and the air conditioning both running, you couldn't record anything in here because it was just unbelievably loud. And the fan you're actually hearing is the computer fan. It's still moaning and complaining about the temperature. Currently in the studio, it's about 85 degrees with about 65% humidity, which doesn't apply to you in the least, but never hurts to know what things are in your own home. If you happen to have something like acoustic guitars or fine cabinetry, that kind of stuff, they don't really like super high humidity, and they really don't like super low humidity. So get yourself a little digital thermometer and humidity meter, and keep an eye on things. If you're a cigar collector, you already know all about humidification systems and that kind of stuff. Those tend to be, the ones they make for humidors tend to be really super accurate. So if you've got a real precious acoustic guitar or something like that, look in the cigar store for the cigar humidity meters and hygrometer and so on and so forth. So they're pretty good quality and not terribly expensive. At any rate, what I've been up to, other than just sweating, kind of funny because, you know, we ran some reruns here for a while, and I ran Beat the Heat and a few other things, and then realized there's a whole bunch of stuff I didn't cover that I'll come back to in a different episode. A lot of what I've been doing lately is I got back into being in a band. You know, it's been 20 years since I was on stage. At my age, should I be a rock star again? I don't know, but we're going to try it. Our band does some pretty weird stuff. We're not really your normal everyday rock and roll band. We do other... musically speaking, we're kind of a hybrid of a whole lot of different things. We don't have a singer, we've got a fire dancer instead, so on and so forth. If you're listening to the show, you have a pretty good idea, or you have a really good chance of knowing what that band name is and how to find us and all that kind of stuff. If not, I might put some stuff up eventually, once we get some video and things like that up. And in future episodes, I'm going to go ahead and use some of the tracks we've done. We've been recording some stuff, and... So somewhere along the way, you're going to hear some of that you know, whether you want to or not. Today I'm going to use a couple of tracks that are more or less mine. I wrote the tracks, but different folks that I know covered them, and I gotta say, they did a better job than I did. I'm gonna use some Gumbo Stew and some Culprits down the road here in this episode. I think I may have used the Culprits track before, but I'm not sure. At some point, I really should probably get a list of all the stuff I've used, because I keep looking at things going, ooh, that'd be a great track to use, and I realize, oh yeah, I used that, you know, 4 episodes ago or something. So at any rate, back on the road again. Getting back into doing band stuff is a lot like getting ready to go back out camping. If you've never gone camping before, if you've never done a long-distance road trip, if you've never, you know, really gotten out of your neighborhood, this episode hopefully will help you some. On the other hand, I will forget a whole bunch of stuff, and we'll have to do a part 2, I'm sure, down the road. I will have a bunch of adventure stories of stupid things that went heinously awry, because that's how things seem to work with these. And there'll be a part 2 somewhere down the road, so, you know, keep an eye out for that. With that, let's actually get into what we're doing. To be on the road, the first thing you're going to have is a vehicle. Be that a bicycle, a semi-truck, or anything in between. And you really need to at least know something about your vehicle so you can make sure that it's in roadworthy shape, which is way beyond the scope of what I've got in this hour. If you've got a, you know, if you've got a vehicle that you can get a maintenance manual for, Chilton's, Haynes, whatever, pick one up. They're usually under $20. If you're trapped out in the middle of nowhere somewhere and you got a few tools, you can probably save yourself a whole lot of money. That said, you know, I said I wasn't going to say so much, and I'm doing it again. That said, you have to have some mechanical aptitude. If you don't have mechanical aptitude, if you don't know which end of the wrench to hold on to, find a friend that can help you out. Because in the long term, there's a reason they call it, you know, busted uncle engineering when it comes to working on cars and trucks and so on and so forth. In the long term, learning a little bit about how the tools work and what's what in there not only will save you money, it will also save you an awful lot of swear words. And I can tell you from personal experience, when I first started working on cars, there were a lot of swear words involved. I was not a particularly patient person. I didn't have anyone close that could really give me a good heads up, you know, that kind of stuff. I started hanging out with some of these older guys around the neighborhood that were wrench benders, and they started showing me some of the basic stuff and showing me some tricks and things like that. You know, take a great big wrench and slide a chunk of pipe over it to break a nut free, spray it down, go WD-40. If that doesn't work, let WD-40 come off it, heat it up with a torch a little bit so that the metal expands and squeezes the rust stuck in the metal. Then stick the big wrench on there with the pipe on it, and it'll probably come off, and hopefully you don't break the wrench, or, you know, it pops off and you whack yourself someplace fun, that kind of stuff. Any rate, find somebody if you don't know anything. Watch a bunch of videos on YouTube about your specific vehicle. And, you know, even if you're not particularly mechanically inclined, there's a bunch of really basic stuff you should know how to do. Walk around your vehicle. Start at the point that controls your car, the tires. Look for wear. Look for any kind of strangeness going on, like a bulge in the side, that kind of stuff. If you don't know anything about tires, they're expensive for one, so maintaining them is really worth your time. And two, if they fail, you have a very, very exciting day to deal with. Bishop and I were going down to an airsoft event down south, and we felt kind of a weird vibration and thought, huh, that doesn't seem right. You know, we were discussing that the car had had some mechanical problems, and our first thought was, well, that's probably a wheel bearing going. We stopped, got out, looked at it. Put my hand down, you put the back of your hand towards something you're checking for heat. Now, if you don't use the back of your hand, if you put your hand right on it, you're going to get burned if it's hot. If it's not hot, no big deal. However, if it's hot, if you've got a brake drag and if you've got a bearing going, something like that, that hub will heat up quite a bit and you'll burn yourself. The palm of your hand doesn't feel heat anywhere near as well as the back of your hand does. So, you know, don't be like me and just latch onto something and go, huh, that burned really bad. Ow, you know, that kind of stuff. Put the back of your hand up near it and feel for heat. If there's no heat, get a little closer. If you can get closer and it doesn't burn you, if you're, you know, a half inch away or something, go ahead and put your hand right on it and see if it's warm. when you're traveling, you really should check your hubs periodically anyway, especially if you've got a trailer. If you've got a trailer and the hub starts to warm up, it probably needs grease in the bearings. I've had that happen before where, you know, I had to take a wheel apart in a parking lot outside of a big box store, go inside, buy a $3 can of grease, and put some grease into it, and made all the problems go away. It's not fun. It really sucks in the rain. If you don't have tools, it's going to be a rather expensive fix. In Bishop's and I's case, we stood there and stared at the wheel and went, huh, there's your problem right there. Whoever the mechanic was that had done work on his car beforehand had managed to break a couple of the lug bolts. And there was only one still there holding the tire on. And when you only have one, it tends to cause the wheel to flop around a little bit, make some vibration. And if that lets go going down the road, you're now driving a three-wheeled vehicle that wasn't designed for that. That's excitement you don't want. Okay, sure, you get some cool stories out of it. You might have a cool adventure. You might meet some cool people. You also have a really good chance of being upside down in a ditch going, huh, that wasn't so much fun. So, you know, try to avoid that. Walk around, look at your lug nuts. And actually reach down and feel them. If the nut itself turns, this is an issue. They should be spun down tight and then just a little tighter. You don't want to really reef on them. I mean, you know, you put them on there with some force. I can't remember exactly. Every vehicle is a little different as to what the torque is supposed to be. Usually I spin the wrench down and then lean into it my full body weight, and it'll make a squeak, and then I'm happy. But I also check my lug nuts about every 2 weeks. And if I'm on a long trip, they get checked typically every day. You know, if I'm going to run a couple thousand miles, I will go around it with a four-way wrench and check them every day just to make sure. I've had a couple of vehicles have lug bolts fail and break off and disappear on me, but I've only lost one at a time up until that little adventure. So, you know, hey, shout out to Bishop there. Let's not do that again, all right? We already got that story, so let's keep going. In the longer, we ended up having to leave it. We couldn't get, we were actually going to replace them in the field. It was about 8:30 or so in the evening, and we were actually going to just, you know, tear it down and fix it right there in the field, but we weren't anywhere terribly close to a big box store or an auto parts store or something like that we could get parts at. And we were running with a second car, and we kind of weighed out, you know, we had to be someplace at a certain time. We kind of weighed out and said, geez, can we pack all of our crap into one car? Which, yes, we could, but it really kind of looked like, yeah, it looked a lot like clowns stuffed into a Volkswagen when we were done. So what we ended up doing was we stopped and asked for directions where we were at. We asked for directions. And this is another important thing. City folks, pay attention to this. In the country, just a little ways is a different distance than you're used to. Bishop went in and asked for directions, and I stood there for a second and looked at him and says, did you ask him in miles how far it was? Good point. No. Well, let's risk it and see. You know, we're going to run really slow and try and, you know, not drive too exciting and not get it up on two wheels and all that kind of stuff. The just a little ways turned out to be about 5 miles. We did find a garage. They had the stuff in stock. They didn't have anybody around. They wouldn't let us use their tools, understandably so, you know. So we ended up leaving the car there overnight. Didn't cost us a huge amount to get it fixed, which was nice. Sometimes when you have to get something fixed in an emergency out in the middle of nowhere, it can cost a shocking amount. If we'd had the equipment, we could have done the repair ourselves for under $20. But, you know, trying to jack up a loaded car alongside the freeway, not a lot of fun. You know, if at all possible, if something goes wrong with your car, if at all possible, get off the main thoroughfare. A lot of auto parts stores actually are not that funny about you setting up in their parking lot and doing a two-hour swap over in their parking lot. I know guys that have changed water pumps in the parking lot of auto parts stores and so on and so forth. And sometimes they'll even go so far as to loan you tools. They might want to keep your driver's license or something like that to make sure you're not going to take off with a whole bunch of really expensive tools. But if you're, you know, broke down their lot, you're not going anywhere. So, you know, sometimes whenever you're out traveling and stuff, make note of where the auto parts stores are. Quite often, they'll be a real major saver. That said, you should know how to change a tire. You should know how to maintain your tires. Let's do that first. Get yourself one of those little $3-4 tire pressure gauges. Read on the side of the tire, somewhere on the side of the tire, in little letters that are probably covered in mud and bird poop and all kinds of other weird stuff. there's a suggested tire pressure range. Keep your tires inflated to that range and check them as the weather changes. When it gets cooler, quite often your tires will kind of get a little flatter because the air is not expanded as much. Now, if you put air in when it was 104 degrees out and now it's 30, your tires will be underinflated and they won't wear well. And the converse is true also. Sometimes your tires will overinflate. If you filled them up really good and, you know, got it right up there up to the maximum pressure when it was 12 degrees out and now it's 112, there's going to be a difference. As you're driving, the tires warm up. As the tires warm up, just from the friction on the road, the air in the tire expands. So you have to check them at operating temperature. Unless you're going to be in the town a lot, in the city, that kind of stuff, driving around where you don't have as much warming as you do out at freeway speeds, you really want to periodically check your tires right after you stop. And I would check your tire pressure weekly. Typically, when I'm traveling a lot, I'll go out and actually check my tire pressure daily. Again, you know, if you're on the road, if you're really doing a lot, you check a lot of things more frequently. That said, you should know how to change a tire. Every vehicle has a different spot that's designed specifically to put the jack. If you put the jack in the wrong spot, you have a pretty good chance of having things go really heinously awry. The jack won't fit, the metal will collapse, and the car will come crashing down on top of you, probably maiming you, making you say a lot of swear words, possibly killing you. Don't do that. It's really important to use your brain anytime you're doing this. If you've got a maintenance manual that came with your car, it'll tell you where to put the jack, if you've got the jack that came with it. If you've got a floor jack or something like that, there's a couple of spots you can always safely jack against. If the cup is really deep, some of the portable floor jacks you can throw in your trunk are really pretty deep. You can actually cup the metal part around the base of the shock on the axle. It can be tricky to get up in there, especially if you're in the rain alongside the road. But because that's part of the weight-bearing suspension system of the car, you can safely pick the car up by that suspension system. When you jack the car up, doesn't matter where you're jacking against, when you jack the car up, you absolutely positively should put something against the tires. And a 2x4 does not count here. The car can roll over that. In a pinch, I have actually used things like a curb or one of those concrete stops that you see in parking lots. Rolled the car right tight up against it and jacked up the car so it couldn't roll that direction. It's really better if you can do it on both front and back of the wheels. Because if the car starts to roll backwards, it's coming toward where you're probably at or one of your friends is at, that kind of stuff. Not good. Any of this stuff can hurt you, can kill you, so, you know, be careful doing it. It wouldn't be a bad thing to have a couple of friends help you jack a car up that have done this a bunch and still have all their fingers. If they can count to 10 without taking their shoes off, that's probably not a half bad choice, but they could still be idiots, so, you know, take everything with a grain of salt and watch them carefully. A lot of companies make little folding metal chocks. For jacking something up, they're okay. I wouldn't use them for anything really risky. I wouldn't particularly trust them for much. But for jacking a car up to swap a tire out, they're not bad. If it comes to it, and you have no other options, and you have to jack the car up without any support front or back, dig around for rocks, dig around for what have you, find something, pile sand around the wheel. Anything you can do, and typically what tire you're going to brace is the opposite one that you're removing. So if, say, it's the passenger side rear tire, you block the driver's front. And that goes anywhere on the car, diagonally across the car, other side, other end. Obviously, if you're dealing with something like a bicycle, that's a little different story. You don't really need to chalk that or jack it up or anything like that. But, you know, for cars, trucks, that sort of stuff, couldn't hurt to know how to do that. Once you've got your ability to change tires, you can also save yourself some money by rotating your tires. However, rotating your tires requires you to be able to jack up one whole end of the car at once, which is more dangerous. Chalk both front tires if you're doing the back, so on and so forth. At that point, you're probably going to actually jack up on the mounts to the frame on the bumper. And you want to get up underneath there and do some looking, because something that looks solid and you start jacking and moves is very bad, especially if that happened to be the gas tank. I know a buddy who managed to run a jack right up through his gas tank one day because he thought it was part of the frame and it was actually just a strangely shaped gas tank. Modern cars tend to have slots in the bumper or someplace like that that the jack is intended to lock right into. There's a lot of different variations. Your car is going to be different. You're going to want to do some research here. So, now you can get it up in the air, you can swap the tire out. But you got it up in the air and you can't get the stupid tire off. Well, I probably should have warned you, the best way to actually break free the lug nuts is while it's still sitting on them. Put your four away. The little J-shaped tire iron that comes with will work, but a four-way wrench is easier to work with. They're not horribly expensive. If you're on the road a lot, they are probably going to be one of those tools you're going to want to pick up. And when you're there picking stuff up, you might want to grab some road flares too, just in case. If you're out in the rain on blacktop, your car just about disappears in oncoming headlights. Throwing a road flare out 100 feet behind you is not a half bad idea, and having a second one that you can stick in the ditch to give you light next to you isn't a half bad idea if you don't happen to have your belt flashlight or something like that. And having a belt flashlight's great, or having a flashlight in your toolbox or in your glove compartment's great, but you're out of hands. Road flares typically are not super expensive. They last pretty long. They're not hard to light. Each one has directions inside. There's a couple different methods to light road flares. Usually you pull the cap off the top and pull kind of a, almost kind of looks like a grenade pin on some of them. Once in a while, you'll still run into the ones that strike like a giant match. Be aware the road flare will say on the side usually how long it burns, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, something like that. I find that a 40-minute road flare is probably more light than you need, and they're just about impossible to put out. They're a phosphorus base. They burn very, very hot. Once they light, stay away from them. Don't try and pick them up and move them and stuff like that, because the dripping material coming off them will tear you up something awful. This is coming from a blacksmith. If you've never been around phosphorus before, they have an unusual smell. If you've got allergies and stuff like that, you want to stay upwind of them so that you're not getting the smoke and stuff off them. And they're probably not a good thing to have the smoke coming off them anyway. So, you know, no road flares in your bedroom. Just saying, not a good idea. Don't do that. Couldn't hurt to have them. Get yourself a four-way. A lot of people have the reflective triangles they'll set up and things like that, and they are useful, but they don't provide any extra light. Nowadays, you can get little stick-on magnetic LED lights that plug into your cigarette lighter and have a really long cord on them. Those are nice. They're bright. They work pretty good. They're not terribly expensive. They're handy for all kinds of stuff. When you get out camping or trying to set up and, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning because everything went wrong and you got wrong directions and you didn't get to camp until really late, they're really handy for a lot of stuff. Having that light to help set up is not a bad thing. But at any rate, you got your car up in the air, you're ready to get your car up in the air. You break them free with your four-wheel. You put the correct size, can't be loose, can't be sloppy. You want the correct size, and there are metric and English ones, so check your car and make sure. Most auto parts stores will let you go outside and check and make sure it actually fits your car. Put the correct size on it. Hold the bar sticking out, and typically I will actually stand up and put my weight on one of the projecting sides to spin it loose. You break them loose, you jack the car up, you use the four-way to spin them completely off, you have the tire sitting and waiting. When the lug nuts come off, you take the hubcap off and you put the lug nuts in the hubcap. This way you don't lose them, they don't roll down the hill into the rainwater or mud or wherever, you know. Because in the middle of nowhere, you don't really want to lose a lug nut. That's just no fun. Now, let's make the assumption that you did what I did once. I had everything set up. My tire was sitting there. My lug nuts were in the hubcap. I pulled the tire off. It got on my hands, flipped over, hit the hubcap, and launched all of my lug nuts into this kind of murky, dark water that I could see a couple of water moccasins in and decided I didn't really want to go in after them. Now you have one of those everyday minor emergencies that this show is here to help you with. Even on cars with small tires that only have four lug nuts each, you can do this. You'll put the other tire, the new tire, back on. If you have a donut or a spare, either way. I hate donuts with a passion. Most people do. They're really not intended to be run on. They're a 50-mile tire at, you know, 30 miles an hour. You put the tire on, and you very carefully will go to the other tires around the car and remove one lug nut from each tire. You're going to bring them back over, and you're going to put those on to hold the wheel on. Obviously, if you've got a vehicle that has more lug nuts, you can get away with taking them. You know, if you've got an 8-bolt big old pickup or something like that, you can take two off each or what have you and have more to hold the wheel on with. Once the lug nuts are actually back on, you're going to go through, and they call it a star pattern. You're tightening them back down in a star pattern. You're going to spin them down just snug while the car is still up in the air. Then you're going to set it down. You're going to let the jack down slowly so the car doesn't slam into the ground. And you're going to spin them down in a star pattern. If you've got five, it's really easy. If you've got four, it's just the cross ones. You say the top one, then the bottom one, then the left one, then the right one. And you're going to go back through and snug them down just a little bit further after they're all snugged down. You're going to go back over it one more time. Like I say, they don't have to be really reefed on there. They're pretty strong bolts, but nonetheless, you can still possibly break them. Any place that uses air wrenches, I've got the air wrenches set to stop at a certain amount of force. And it depends on the car, usually. And mechanics will probably call me on this. They'll probably say there's a universal. I don't know. So you'll have to do your research and that kind of stuff. Or ask a mechanic. If you got a buddy that's a mechanic, works in an auto body shop or something like that, ask them to find out. Learn from other people's experiences. That's what a lot of this is about. It doesn't have to be your experience. It just has to be someone's experience. Learn from other people's mistakes, because, boy, there's some folks like me out there that make a lot of them for you. Wow, that little pop was my elbow. Let's not do that again, all right? Maintain your tires, maintain your fluid levels. Under no circumstances will you open the radiator when it's hot. Why won't you do this? Because I have scars to show why not to do this. Back, I don't know, 20 years ago, we were going someplace, and we were real time sensitive. We had to be someplace for something. And my buddy's car kept overheating. So we stopped along the way, and he had one of those safety let-off valve radiator caps. Our theory was reduce the pressure, add cold water to the reserve tank so that it would suck it back up and mix it in and not crack the radiator, not crack the block, that kind of stuff. With one little problem. That particular cap had gotten corroded to the point that when we turned it to release the pressure, the center blew out of it and fired a gout. We threw a heavy piece of canvas over it. It fired a gout of superheated steam, probably almost 300 degree steam, up through the center of that thing, blew the core right out of it, up my arm, blew a hole through the canvas, up my arm, up my right side, across the right side of my face. Fortunately, I was wearing a leather jacket at the time. It wasn't that warm yet, so, you know, we had our coats on and stuff. I had a heavy biker leather jacket on, and that saved me from being really severely injured. As it was, the whole arm of the jacket was pretty much deep fried. Where I got caught across the side of the face, scarred me pretty good, burned really extensively. Steam burns are incredibly nasty. They do a great deal of damage very, very rapidly. If your radiator is even... Do the back of the hand trick again. If it's cool enough, you can put your hand on it. Push in lightly, rotate slightly. Get your hand away from it. If it blows steam and water and stuff down onto the pavement, still too warm, leave it a little longer. Typically, what you do, there's an overflow tank. You add water to the overflow tank, and as the car heats up, the vacuum in the radiator system will pull additional coolant up into it. If your coolant levels are low, that's the way to do it. Or to wait until the car is cold and then add water when the car is cold. Water and coolant mix. Usually it's a 50-50 mix of antifreeze and water, depending. In a pinch, you can use creek water and that kind of stuff. I really don't suggest it. If you have to, take a t-shirt. You know, I've been in this situation before where we broke a hose. We managed to tape the hose up, which really ain't the best way to do it, but it works. We managed to tape the hose up. We were next to a small creek. We needed to put creek water in the car to get the car someplace we could fix it properly. So we laid a T-shirt over the inlet on the radiator and poured in creek water. It will work. It's not a great solution, but it will work. Eventually, we went through and drained all that out and put decent water in it, put antifreeze in it, put real coolant, all that kind of stuff. Check your fluid levels. Keep good track of that kind of stuff. Check your oil levels, your transmission fluid periodically. Your oil level is critical. If the oil light comes on, stop! Because if the car is out of oil and basically is running dry, the engine will seize up. It'll be very expensive and not a lot of fun. I'm going to take a break here. We're going to play a couple of songs, and we'll come back with some other tips and hints and stupid stories of dumb things I've done that you can learn from here in just a little bit. I think we're going to do Gumbo Stew first, who did a very nice, pleasant little cover of my track Light and Shadow that I wrote for RPM a few years back. And then we're going to go to The Culprits, who covered my track Goth Song, both of which you can find on AloneTone.com.
I've seen many days, sat through many nights, seen many rainbows, and the rain on city lights. Light and shadow, the cycle never ends. Light and shadow, that's all there is, my friends. Light and shadow. Light and shadow. Light and shadow. The cycle never ends.
Get yourself in tune. the world's a mess, but you don't know why. You can't change it unless you try. People say it's the end of the world. Everybody, boys and girls, get together. You gotta get your life together. Get yourself in tune.
You know, I actually write pretty good songs for other people to sing. If you've ever heard my versions of those, you'll understand what I mean by that. Their stuff is a whole lot better than mine. Any rate, I've been writing and recording a lot of music lately. There's a whole bunch of stuff that will show up. The underlying tracks here are all off my most recent album, or part thereof. I mean, these aren't the complete tracks I'm running. These are the partials I'm running underneath stuff. And oddly enough, the repeating riff that you hear that I play quite a bit got evolved in the new band into a song called Open Road. Memphis Mike and I got together and started screwing around with it and came up with a whole different way of playing it. It's still roughly the same song, but it's a lot more up-tempo. It's a lot more, you know, it makes you want to go out and drive fast. It really does. Which was kind of cool. So, you know, that came out cool. I'm going to put that up here at some point in one of the shows. We're actually going to feature stuff we've done just with this band. We'll give you links and all that kind of stuff. So, any rate, back on the road again. So now we've got your tires done. You checked your air pressure. You know how to change them, that kind of stuff. You've gone through and you've checked your fluid levels, all that kind of stuff. Can't hurt to have your car gone over by a mechanic periodically. Schedule maintenance, you know, like changing your spark plugs, all that kind of stuff. Just makes life easier. When your vehicle isn't fighting you all the time, life is just so much easier to deal with, you know? A lot of times what'll happen is it'll develop a weird little noise. Try and figure out where the noise is. You have to tilt your head and listen and stuff like that. Is it front or back? Is it left or right? That kind of stuff. That helps your mechanic a lot. If you're mechanically inclined, I don't have to tell you this. You know how to do all this stuff. If the noise is up front in the engine, there's a really weird trick a friend of mine showed me that will help you dig it out. Open the hood. Be really stupidly careful about anything moving. Obviously, the fan belt, the moving fan, so on and so forth, stay the hell away from. Oh, crap, I wasn't supposed to swear. That happens. Grab yourself a length of pipe, say a 3-4 foot long chunk of even like EMT conduit or plastic PVC pipe, whatever. You can press it against the engine block where there's no moving parts and listen. It will amplify just that area so you can pick out certain areas. If it sounds like it's coming from the engine, you can go through and usually figure out roughly where it is, and you get to your mechanic and say, well, it's somewhere in this back corner by these two cylinders. And he'll go, oh, well, you know, we'll look there and see what's going on. By pre-diagnosing some, you also don't get things like if you go to a mechanic that's not very scrupulous, you know, and says, oh, well, your turn signal fluid needed changing, you know, that kind of stuff. You've got a clue that, huh, that's not connected to where the noise was, Bucky. So, you know, save yourself some money. That's a whole lot of the Ranger's Creed. Do it yourself as much as you possibly can. Learn from the experience of others. Learn by doing, learn by watching others who know what they're doing, and try it for yourself. Am I suggesting you go through and do an engine rebuild when you've never had any mechanical ability whatsoever? No. Am I suggesting you have a buddy come over that knows what's going on, spend a couple of days, buy him really good dinners and a couple of beers and so on and so forth, and watch him do it, help him do it? Heck yeah. You can fetch wrenches for him. You know, he'll show you what he's doing. It might be a bonding experience. Who knows? You know, you might have a story to tell when you're all done. Yeah, we got all taken apart and found a squirrel living in the air cleaner, which is actually less funny than it sounds. I bought a Volkswagen van years ago and got it back home. It had been stored in a barn forever and a day. The barn had actually collapsed on top of it. It was really kind of an experience all around. Got it back home, started working on it, discovered that one of the air cleaners actually did have a live mouse nest in it with mice that weren't too happy about being moved. All the places they knew where to go get food weren't there anymore, so they came out into the garage and, you know, made a heck of a mess. When you're, you know, we'll cover going to buy a used car, a new car, something like that later. That's a whole other many, many hour long rant, you know, stomping around, swearing, all kinds of stuff. Have yourself some basic tools so when you're out on the road, and don't, I totally am guilty of this. I pack my tools under everything else I need because you hardly ever need them. Don't pack in things like the four-way. The four-way should be relatively easy to get to. Don't pack in your air gauge really deeply. You know, throw it in the glove box, something like that. Throw it in that little console between your seats that all your change and stuff is in. You know, put it someplace you can get to it, because you are going to use it, you're going to want it, and it will save you money in the long run. I'm absolutely horrible for having my tools under everything. Yes, I've had to unpack the entire car alongside the road a couple of different times. Not a lot of fun. Makes for a great story. Leave out the swear words, leave out the bad parts. Makes for a great story. But that said, you know, if you've got some basic tools along with you in a canvas bag or something like that, helps a lot. Another great thing to have is a 6 foot long by 3 foot wide canvas tarp, or even a plastic tarp will work. Just something to protect you from the ground, because invariably when you break down, you're in someplace awful. Gravel or pickers or mud or, you know, any number of other really exciting things like that. We had to change a tire one time down in Texas. A buddy of mine's vehicle, the tire went down on. So okay, no big deal. We pulled off side of the road, you know, the tire was shot. It had come apart going down the road, which is, you know, a lot of fun. You don't want to have that happen if all possible. Beat the living snot out of the fender and stuff, so we had to do some jerking on the fender and whatnot. And in the process, we discovered that the exact spot that we had stopped at was a fire ant mound. Fortunately, I'm not allergic to them, so it didn't really bother me that much, but he's horribly allergic to them. And didn't really dare get bit, so we threw a big hunk of canvas over the top of it. And when we were done, we picked the canvas up and shook it off good, refolded it, threw it in the back of the truck, and off we went. Had we not had that, he'd probably had an allergic reaction. Then we had a medical emergency alongside the road, which is not a whole lot of fun. And I'm saying again. Jeez. At any rate, when you've got your basic car kit together, a couple of advanced things that I would really strongly suggest you have. I've been on this one before. Water, food, a first aid kit of some sort, the knowledge how to use all of these things. If your food happens to be cans, a can opener, because I've been in that situation before. And a fire extinguisher. The little number 10 fire extinguisher you can get from a lot of different places really are worth having. If you come up on a car fire, oh, this is a whole huge topic. I don't have time to cover this one. Let me just say right now, if you come up on a car fire, car fires go really fast, really hot, and can be potentially dangerous. Is it going to be a 300 foot tall mushroom cloud like you see in the movies? Nope. However, it is going to be a lot of fumes, a lot of things that are really unhealthy to breathe. Usually what will happen in a car fire, if it starts at the front, it's up in the engine, there's a break in the gas line. If the car is shut off, the fuel pump usually stops and it won't spread. However, it can run the lines at that point. The fire can get back into the lines as air gets in there. If there's no air, it can't burn. It's rare, but it can happen. Usually it starts moving through other things. It'll burn along wires. It'll burn along... You know, once it gets in the interior, it's a horrible mess. So if you come up on a car fire, the thing to do is to spray coming up to the door. Your little fire extinguisher is not going to be real effective at putting it out. If the engine fire had just started, pop the hood, yes, you can put it out. The car's probably going to be a mess. There's probably going to be some real issues. But if you have to get somebody out of a car, if absolutely nothing else, you can use that to break the window, hopefully not the one right next to them. You come up on a car, a good friend of mine is on the fire department and found a wreck on fire against a tree not too long ago. The driver was probably intox, we're not sure. Any rate, he got up on the scene. The front of the car was on fire. The car was leaking fluids all over the place. The gas was leaking. It was going to get ugly. It was going to get ugly fast. The driver was passed out in the driver's seat. We don't know for sure what the deal there was. He didn't fill me in on that part. He broke the driver's side rear window, reached in and hit the lock because the locks were thrown. A lot of cars automatically lock when the car's in motion. He broke the window out, opened the car up, got the guy out just as EMS was getting there. So they handled the guy, broke the back window using the fire extinguisher. Now, the issue with that is, obviously, don't use the spray part because you could break that off and then, you know, dump all that chemical all over yourself. The dry chemical in a dry chemical fire extinguisher is just unpleasant on your skin. It's hard to get off. It's hard to get out of your clothes. It makes a horrible mess. It works great. And if you do have to put out a car fire, aim at the base of the flames, which is almost always going to be on the engine. If the fire has gotten into the cabin and you've got somebody in the cabin, you have to knock down the fire to get them out. Say they're trapped, they've got a seatbelt that won't let go. You should be carrying a knife. If you've been listening to this show, you probably do carry a knife. That knife can save lives, and does sometimes. Spray the base of the flames, starting closest to them and pushing away. And actually spray just slightly closer to them than where the fire is, so that it creates a barrier. The fumes, the smoke, the heat are your biggest issues. I can't cover the whole thing here sufficiently. That needs to be a whole show in itself in dealing with emergencies like that. But I've also come up on things like... we found a spot where a car had been dragging its tow chains. They were towing a boat, and the tow chains were throwing sparks. Because we actually came up on the vehicle later and found it, and we came up on this little grass fire alongside the road. So we stopped and got out the fire extinguishers, and I happen to have shovels, so we got the shovels out too and kind of beat down the fire real quick, used the fire extinguisher on the fairly good-sized piece of wood that was there, got the fire put out, got a little further up the road and discovered another fire that somebody else was working on, and realized that it was something driving down the road trailing something that was causing the fire. Stopped and helped them, got a little further up the road, and sure enough, there's a car towing a boat sitting alongside the road, and they're putting out a fire that they had actually seen start from their chains. Their chains were just chewed up. There was barely any metal left in the chains that were dragging. So if you're towing something, check your chains frequently. My trick has been for years and years and years to wrap a rubber bungee or a synthetic bungee strap around either the tongue, or if you've got a jack or a king post or something like that on the back of it, wrap it around that and pull the chains up so the chains arc up. If you need the emergency chains, if it breaks free, which does occasionally happen, the bungee cord will stretch and the chains will go straight and save your vehicle. They will make all the difference in the world. Having that bungee cord on there won't make a bit of difference, but it will keep them from dragging. One, it keeps them from wearing away. Two, it keeps them throwing sparks. And three, you don't get the chains as full of gunk, tar off the road, you know, all kinds of nasty stuff like that. So, but towing is another whole... I'd say, you know, probably back on the road 4 or 5. Because towing is a whole bunch of stuff that needs to be covered at some point. So we'll come back around to that eventually. At any rate, you should have your whole car kit. You should know how to use everything in your car kit. Common sense is always important. Keep your windows clean. The silicone-based anti-gunk stuff does seem to help on the windows. Good wipers can't hurt. Wash your windows before you set out on a long trip, inside and out. If your windows fog up, try not to touch them with your hands, because the oils in your hands will streak. In oncoming traffic, it'll tend to cause stars and all kinds of weird problems like that. Keep your windows clean. If you got to wipe your windows off, use your hat, gloves, napkins, whatever, just so you're not getting the hand oils on. And you know, if it's a greasy napkin you use on the fried chicken, not so much with that one either, huh? Any rate, we're coming down toward the end of the hour. I've got to find a track to stick on the end here, and that's going to be interesting because I don't have a clue what I'm going to put on. If I had Open Road done, I'd stick that on there because it really kind of fits. Let me dig around. I'm gonna find a piece of music, then I'll yammer up to that, and we'll go from there. Oh, you know what? I know the perfect track to put on here. At the end of this, I'm going to put on Freight Drive Reprobates, Highway Blues. I want to send this one out to Fat Ninja, who's very active in the rant forums, has been forever and a day. I think he might even been on a couple of the old shows back in the day. I don't know if you're listening or not, buddy. I love your posts for the Uncle Dak Show. I love your posts in rant and stuff. You're a heck of an inspiration out there driving on the open highways. anybody who hasn't been out on the open highway a lot, when you get out there, look at the trucks. Stay out of their way. Give them a break. Give them a chance. They're the ones that are keeping us going right now. We've lost a lot of our trains, that kind of stuff. Our truck drivers are really the ones that are moving everything. You may not be aware, but we're losing an awful lot of trucking companies. In the last few years, we've lost a tremendous amount of trucking companies. And when things really pick back up, we are screwed because there aren't really enough truck drivers out there. It's not an easy job. I've done it. I got to say, in some ways, it's great. You get to see a little bit of the country, most of it from the highway, which isn't so much fun. You get to meet some neat people. You get to eat some really, really bad for you food that tastes great. I got to give big props to that. While we're giving big props, I want to give big props to Rant Radio, which carries our show. I think we're going to get picked up by the Osprey Network here soon, so hopefully that'll happen. You can find Rant Radio at rantmedia.ca. That's rantmedia.ca. Check out all the other shows on Rant Radio Talk, Rant Radio Industrial, Rant Radio Punk. I want to throw a big shout out to Sim for keeping it going on this, 13 years now, since 1999. Rant Radio may be the oldest still operating shoutcast station on the internet. I'm not sure. I know they've been around an awful long time. If you got a few extra bucks, jump on over there, click the donate tab, help Sim keep this up, keep it on the air, that kind of stuff. There's a whole lot more to cover out on the road, so we're going to come around and do another episode of this down the road a little bit. I got some other episodes I'm working on, three or four that are about half done that need to get some things glued together and stuck in there, a couple interviews, that kind of stuff. Hopefully you'll get to hear those on Rant Radio. I can talk. I really can. Get to hear us on Rant Radio, possibly on Osprey Network. Currently we're airing at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on Rant on Saturday nights. I pre-record the shows, which allows me to do some really weird stuff. This last weekend, I was both on air on Rant Radio and playing on stage at the same time. No, we were setting up still. We were setting up. So, possibly this weekend I'll be doing that, I don't know. Kind of weird being two places at one time, but that's how you do it. At some point we'll go through and do a full how to podcast and how to do all this kind of stuff and so on and so forth. And then if you're into this, if you're interested, if you got something to say, we'll get you guys doing this too out there. And hopefully I'll get to listen to your shows and maybe get a laugh out of it and that kind of stuff. Hopefully I'll get to learn some stuff from you. Hopefully you don't have the kind of adventures I do that allow me to know all this kind of weird stuff. All of our music is free to download, free to distribute, that kind of stuff. We get permission from the artists. Most of the artists, I think actually all the artists we've used so far have said, yes, please do. So go to alonetone.com, A-L-O-N-E-T-O-N-E.com. check out some of the artists up there. This episode was Gumbo Stew, who might be just Gumbo up there, I can't remember. Freight Drive Reprobates, who's coming up next, and The Culprits. There's a bunch of other spurs off from The Culprits. I really recommend Sister Savage if you're into that kind of Celtic female vocal sound, that kind of stuff. Chain Monkey, a bunch of other guys like that. That said, let's see. I got like 5 minutes to yammer here until the song starts, of course. Well, okay, so how's it going, eh? I'm from Michigan. I speak fluent Canadian. We have to. There was a point at which I was actually translating between a Texan and a Canadian. I realized, geez, they're both speaking English. They just have different dialects of it. It's just kind of bizarre. Anyway, that aside, our sites again are rangers.com, R4NGER5.com. Hopefully we'll be getting some new media up there soon. V just got back from a many week long boat excursion that he's going to be telling us about. He's got some video that he's working on right now that will be basically how to build a kind of a cabin out in the middle of nowhere. He's been shooting video out in the woods, and that'll be up real soon. I know the other guy's been up to some stuff. Graffin and Kevin is a Geek and Miu all got together and did some hanging out, but I don't know if they shot video or recorded or anything. But keep checking there. Keep checking the schedule at Rant Radio. One of the other Rangers is part of the 76th Street podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to Brandon Engel there. Check out his site, BrandonEngel.com. He's got some great photography up. And with that, it looks like we're getting down to the last little bit. Let me zoom in real quick. We're going to call that less than a minute before we go into the last track. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your family. Take care of your friends. This is a one of those Rangers concepts that, you know, learn how to be a functional person and be one. Go out in the world and try and make it, you know, try and make a difference. Try and improve things. If you possibly can, share what you know and learn from others' experience. Pass along that experience so future generations don't stand there puzzled looking at, you know, basic items and going, how does this thing work like a hammer? Because that doesn't do anybody any good. With that, I'm going to leave you with Freight Drive Reprobates and Highway Blues. Fun little song.
Music up, Joe. I'm just a reprobate on the highway.